10 World Series championships, a record 71 World Series hits, 3 American League MVP awards, a humanitarian, a war veteran, and maybe the most quoted athlete ever, Yogi Berra has pretty much done it all. His long list of accomplishments makes this 90-year-old American icon more than qualified to receive the Presidential Medal of Freedom, the highest civilian honor in the United States. A petition to get Yogi recognized by the White House has been championed by several, including his granddaughter, Lindsay. I led off our conversation by asking how this all got started.
I believe a couple of years ago, it was actually my Uncle Dale's idea, when one of the other, I think it was Stan Musial, got it. He said, well, how come Dad? No one thought of Dad for that award. He seems like he's just as deserving as Stan is. And then we kind of forgot about it. And then the board, I'm on the board at the Yogi Berra Museum and Learning Center, we decided to take up the cause again for Grandpa's 90th birthday. So we started the petition online right, I think, the day before his 90th birthday. And it went on from there.
And you were able to get the necessary, I think it was 100,000 signatures by June the 8th to generate a response from the White House, which, as those who have signed it, myself included, received an email stating that it's still pending.
Yes.
Do you know when you anticipated a decision made by the president?
I anticipated some sort of response before that response we all got, because on whitehouse.gov it says you're supposed to get an answer within 30 days. So we got that notification that said it ain't over till it's over, which I guess just means the president is still thinking about it. And that's really all we know. We don't really know any more than anyone else who signed the petition.
As humble as your grandfather is, I'm sure he wants this to happen very much. How involved is he with all this, or is it more just the board's doing?
It's more us. He knows that we did it. I tried to explain the process of signing an online petition to him, and he, like, I think he thought I was crazy. 90-year-olds are not too internet savvy. But he knows it's still pending, and I wrote a letter to Obama about a week and a half ago, and I've been tweeting at him a lot, and Grandpa said, I told him I was doing that, and Grandpa said to me the other day, he better be careful insulting the king. I said, okay, that's not really what I'm doing, but I guess it could be misconstrued, so maybe I'll back off a little bit. But I told him, I said, I want Obama to give you this just to shut me up, Grandpa, you know? We're trying.
Absolutely, and we all appreciate it. And Yogi Berra, as you and many of us all know, is a part of American folklore, not just in personality and playing ability, but in military service as well.
Mm-hmm.
What case have you made, and do you continue to make, that best makes him a necessary recipient for this honor?
Well, the military service, I know, it's a big part of his life, but this is a civilian honor, so the military service, I'm not actually sure it factors into this award, but, I mean, everybody knows he was a gunner's mate on an LST off of Omaha Beach during the D-Day invasion, providing cover for our troops, and that's an unbelievable thing. This honor is a civilian award for what you give back to your community, and I think Grandpa, I always say this, he's a little tiny microcosm of the American dream. He came from nothing. He was a first-generation Italian immigrant and went on to be the winningest baseball player in Major League history with 10 World Series. And by so doing, really became an inspiration for a generation of immigrants. There are so many people who come up to me and say, I watched your grandfather when I was a boy, and I'm Italian, and I so identified with him. And it was really, you know, that generation was just getting a footing in this country. This country was built by immigrants, and Grandpa was sort of a standard bearer for them. And then when he gets into Major League Baseball, he became something of an unwitting civil rights activist just because he really was colorblind. He didn't see color. If you were a good ball player and a good guy, he didn't care what color you were. He became friends with Jackie Robinson and Elton Howard, Minnie Minoso, all the first black and Latin players. And by helping to push that movement in Major League Baseball, it really helped to push the movement in the country before civil rights was in vogue in this country, because that was in the late 40s and early 50s, and civil rights movement in society didn't really take off until the 60s. He's always been an educational advocate. He started a scholarship fund at Columbia in the 50s that is still going on today. He has the Yogi Berra Museum and Learning Center, which has been around for about 20 years, sees 20,000 kids a year, and serves them with character education programs that really help instill grandpa's values of teamwork, leadership, respect. He's an athlete ally ambassador championing LGBT rights in sports. He really just has done a lot to give back to this tri-state area community that has become his second home.
I asked Casey this, who was the most natural ball player? And Casey said, Williams is the most natural hitter, he said, but that guy is the most natural ball player, pointing to Berra. I was astonished, this little stocky, awkward man, and then I began to watch him then all the time, and Berra did everything well. People thought he was slow. He was a fast runner, great base runner. He once made an unassisted double play at home plate. He had great instincts. He was an extraordinarily graceful athlete for all that awkwardness.
Going back to when you were younger, when was your first understanding of who Yogi Berra was and what he had done?
I don't know that I still get the scope of it, to be honest with you. By the time I was old enough to realize that he was someone other than Grandpa, he'd already been Grandpa for so long that it was sort of hard to rationalize to him that Yogi Berra and Grandpa is the same person. They're sort of two separate entities to me. I remember in college somebody gave me one of those first permutations of the starting lineup figurines of Grandpa catching and his head spun all the way around, and I was like, oh my God, he's an action figure. So that kind of hit home a little bit, but I'm still in awe of a lot of the things that he did, and he's such a normal Grandpa, and he's been so wonderful on those fronts. And then you look at all that he's done outside his family, and it's really just, it's amazing.
I think a lot of people can assume what it's like to speak with such a unique character as Yogi Berra, but you actually do it with regularity. How often do you two talk, and what are those conversations like?
I see him as much as I can, usually 3 or 4 times a week. You know, he's 90 now, and I do like to spend as much time with him as possible. He's in good health, but I feel like when people you love get to that advanced age, you can't take any extra days for granted, so I go see him as much as I can. We sit around and watch, you know, I like to go up there when there's day games to watch, because I know he'll be awake for the whole game, watch, you know, a couple innings of the ball game with him. He still knows some of the players, and he's what you see is what you get with him. What he always was like on television with the public is what he's like with us. He's the same person, and he's funny, and he says all of those things that you think he says, and they, you know, sometimes make no sense, and sometimes are so profound that you're like, oh my goodness, you are so smart. But he's a hoot.
Berra became as well known for what he said off the field as for what he did on it. If fans don't want to come out to the park, nobody's going to stop them, he once said. 90% of hitting is mental. The other half is physical. When the wife of the mayor of New York said he looked very cool in his new summer suit, Yogi replied, "Thanks. You don't look so hot yourself." When asked what he would do if he found $1 million, he said, if the guy was poor, I'd give it back to him. And he also said, it ain't over till it's over.
Yeah, of all those famous quotes, those malapropisms that we've come to know and love, is there one that you enjoy the most, the one that sticks out?
People ask me this all the time, and they usually give me grief for the ones that I pick because they're not the funny ones. My two favorites are the future ain't what it used to be, and if things were perfect, they wouldn't be. The more profound kind of, they're a little more sad than the rest of them, but I think that they really ring true for everybody. So those
are. Yeah, the second one's a little more obscure. I haven't heard that one before.
If things were perfect, they wouldn't be.
Yeah, exactly.
My favorite, and it's true.
That's very true. So, I mean, I'm sure, and you said in those basic conversations, he probably just says something off the cuff that is kind of like that, and it's something that most of the public doesn't know about.
Yes. I'm trying to think if there's a recent one that he said, and nothing's jumping right to me, but he's pretty funny.
For a life in baseball that stretches back to the 40s and a life in general that has seen and experienced so much, he must have some fabulous stories to share, even some that don't make it out to the public. What are some of your favorite stories, baseball-related or otherwise?
I don't know. I more like look back at his career from a baseball standpoint and look at some of those stats. I think it was 1951 where he struck out only 12 times in 597 at bats, which is, you know, guys strike out 12 times in a weekend nowadays. And the one he caught both ends of day-night double headers 117 times in his career. So two games a day, 117 times, which is pretty impressive because a lot of times guys can't even make it nine innings nowadays. Stories, I don't know. I used to fall asleep with my head on Whitey's back up at the Otisaga on Hall of Fame weekend while they were playing Hearts down in the basement. I would just listen to them rib each other and you know, talk about all the remember wins and whatnot. The 20th anniversary of Mickey Mantle's death is coming up on August 13th, and we were just talking the other day about Mickey making fun of Grandpa and saying it wasn't really that hard to call a game. And he said, especially when Ford's pitching, there's really not much work to do. So Grandpa said, okay, you do it. And he let Mickey call a game of Whitey's at Fenway Park. If he stood up, it was a fastball. If he stood up in center field, if he put his hands on his knees, it was a curveball. And you got through seven innings like that with Grandpa relaying Mickey's signs to Whitey. And he came in after the seventh inning and he said, this is exhausting. You can take it from here. But he was up to nothing, so he did a good job. I don't know. There's so many.
No, absolutely. And he grew up, and growing up in St. Louis, I know he was good friends with Joe Garagiola, who's another great character as well.
Yes.
I'm sure they have great stories together.
They do, and they still talk on the phone pretty regularly, those two. It's a bummer. Neither one of them can really travel. They've known each other since they were babies. That's a 90-year friendship right there. It's pretty impressive. But Joe is a hoot, too. They are. You get them together, and man, it's a comedy.
A high drive. That's trouble. It's an even-up ball game. Yogi Berra belts one, and the identical throw to Duke Snyder, high over the screen and into Bedford Avenue, and the ball game is even.
As younger generations get to know Yogi Berra, they really don't fully understand his incredible accomplishments as a Hall of Fame player, and you had mentioned some of these, the 19 Major League seasons, 3 American League MVPs, 10 World Series rings, World Series records in games played with 75, and hits with 71. Do you get a sense in any way that he feels what he accomplished on the playing field is somewhat overlooked?
I don't know. I think anybody who accomplished anything prior to 1970 is probably overlooked by the current generation. But I think Grandpa knows what he meant to those teams, and everyone that he plays with tells me that he was the little engine, you know, that could with those teams, really driving everybody, and just so consistent and so clutch. And I think he knows how much his buddies and his teammates appreciated him, which is what the important thing is. And I don't think he ever really, he didn't play for the recognition and the accolades. He played to win. And if you're looking at success by who won, he certainly was pretty successful. So he's pretty happy with that.
He's dealt with plenty of sports writers and other media members. Then you go into sports writing. What? Mm-hmm. When did you really pursue a career in sports journalism, and what does he think about it?
I didn't really know what to do with myself in college, like a lot of kids, and I had, you know, been an AP English student in high school, and it was really my mom's idea, because there weren't too many ways for girls to stay in sports following college, you know, 25 years ago, and she said, well, why don't you be a sports writer, and for lack of a better idea, I said, okay. And I got a job at ESPN right out of college. I was very lucky. I was covering hockey, one of only a few women covering hockey nationally. And my grandfather was really good friends with John McMullen, who owned the Devils and was a big hockey fan. So he actually loved it because I was traveling all over the country watching all these hockey games and would report back to him on who the Devils would have to play. And that was all during the time of the Devils. You know, when they won 3 Stanley Cups, they were very good. They were always in the hunt every year. So he always wanted to know what was going on. So he loved it. I didn't start covering baseball. I covered a little baseball at ESPN, just more hockey, tennis, Olympic sports and whatnot. And he just loved to, you know, where's Lindsay? Oh, she's in Rome at a tennis tournament. He loved telling people where I was and what I was doing. So he's always gotten a kick out of it.
And now covering baseball, you've probably encountered many former players that played for your grandpa or coached by your grandfather, or even some that were teammates. Is there anything you've learned through them that you didn't know about him?
You know, it's been really nice. Everywhere I go, and I'm not even exaggerating, everywhere I go, a minor league ballpark, a big league ballpark, spring training, you know, just events, everybody has a Yogi story. It's amazing, whether it's a Yogi story by association or a Yogi story that just happened to them. And, you know, it's just, I was just talking to a guy who runs the Asian development program for Major League Baseball, and he met my grandfather in the MLB offices, you know, 25 years ago. And he, grandpa took the time to talk to the kid and make the kid feel like he was the most important person in the room for, you know, the 3 minutes that they spoke. And he says, I always remember that when I meet new people, I try to just give them the time that they deserve and make them feel as important as Yogi made me feel that day. And some of them are really earnest, the stories like that, and that makes you feel good. Some of them are hilarious, you know. I ran into Mark Parent at White Sox camp, and he told me a hysterical story about Grandpa standing behind the cage at a Padres-Astros game at the Astrodome, and Grandpa was standing on a milk crate because he couldn't see over the back of the backstop, which is, you know, he was just short, so he always stood on the milk crate, and two of the White Sox, Padres coaches were talking on the side about the golf games, and Parent is hitting and kind of overhearing the conversation, and then one coach says to the other, you know, I was getting really good for a while, and then I didn't get any better. I'm stuck. And the other coach says, yeah, I hate it when my game just hits a plateau. And Grandpa pipes up from the other side of the cage and says, every time I'm on a plateau, I use my 7-iron, which is completely absurd and completely hilarious that he's using a 7-iron on a plateau. I don't even think he knows what a plateau is, but Parent sought me out to tell me that story, and I love when people do that, whether they're funny stories or earnest stories. It just makes you realize how far his reach goes and how many people he has touched.
Well, this year, he's already received something very valuable. In fact, many very valuable items. His museum in Little Falls, New Jersey, was robbed last October of all his rings and his MVP awards, and unfortunately none of which has been recovered. But on his 90th birthday, this May 12th, not only did he get those 10 replica rings back, he also got a complete set of the 27 Yankee championship rings, and he also got his 3 MVP awards back. That's a pretty good haul for your birthday.
It is. We are so. I'm a little disappointed that we haven't recovered any of the actual stuff that was stolen, because it's just crazy to me. But we were so grateful to Major League Baseball, to the Yankees, to the Mets, for helping us replicate that stuff and get stuff in those cases. The 27 Yankee ring display, it's actually 26 rings and a watch, looks amazing. It's just so impressive when you have all those glittery things in one spot. It's pretty neat, and the MVP plush are beautiful, so we never had all three in one spot. One was always at the Hall of Fame, so now we have three instead of two. So I guess you can consider that a net gain, and it's great. Everybody should come to the museum and check them out.
A wise man once said, you can observe a lot by watching. Today we observe the 90th birthday of a man who goes beyond the title of legend. Surrounded by friends and family, Yogi Berra showed off that familiar smile. His museum just received replacements for the stolen World Series rings, and it couldn't have been a better birthday present. Yogi didn't speak. He didn't need to say anything. And as he once reminded us, he, quote, never said half the things he said.
I'm sure he was completely touched and overwhelmed by the gesture.
Yeah, he just kind of looked at he was like, those are mine? I'm like, well, not all of them, Grandpa. Only 10.
I can imagine if he does, in fact, receive the Presidential Medal of Freedom, which I truly think it should and will happen, then he may have to revert to one of his famous phrases that he used. I think it was, I don't know when he was honored one time, and I think he said, I want to thank you for making this day necessary.
That was at Yogi Berra Day at the stadium, the original one, when was it? Early 70s.
Well, I think he might have to go maybe use that if he gets to go to the White House. That might be a good
I think that he will.
Well, I and many others hope a day to honor your grandfather with the Presidential Medal of Freedom becomes necessary. And it will be well-deserved, and you would certainly have a lot to do with it as well. So thanks so much for your time, Lindsay. I really appreciate it and wish you all the best.
Thank you. And if anybody wants to put some more pressure on the president, tweet at White House, at POTUS, at Barack Obama. Just keep the bug in his ear.
Among the other baseball legends that have won the Presidential Medal of Freedom, the aforementioned Stan Musial, Mr. Cub, Ernie Banks, Jackie Robinson, Frank Robinson, and Hank Aaron. I'm Brian Wright. Thanks so much for listening to this edition of Baseball As It Was.